Hey everyone, how you doing? This is Amon Green, the Green Bay Packers all-time leading rusher, and you're listening to The Average Cheese, hosted by Dell and Todd, two lifelong Packer fans talking about their favorite team, the 13-time champion, Green Bay Packers. Go Pack, go.
What the hell's going on out here? Everybody's grabbing out there. Nobody's touching. Just grabbing, everybody.
Trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win.
So welcome to episode 133 of the Average Cheese Podcast. It's the whole family for episode 133. Thanks to Rhonda and the folks at R&M Management. Thanks to Dwight at ddgcustoms.com. And thanks to Dan and the folks at Bob Anderson Builders. Peter? It's episode 133. It is the Barty Smith episode.
It nearly was. And then it was nearly the Keith Woodside episode. And then it was nearly the Jesse Clark episode.
But eventually
I had to, you know, there's some guys in Packers history that play at quite a high level for a number of years, but there's one play that you always remember that defines them. For this guy, it was the 24th of November, 1996. And it was that Packers team that would eventually go on to win the Super Bowl. At this stage of the season, they were 8-3. They'd started the season 8-1. They'd then got beat up with injuries. Freeman had broken his arm. Robert Brooks had gone out with a knee injury. Mark Shimura had hurt his foot and was out injured. And the Packers went to the Rams on a Sunday night game and were behind in that game. So they were on the verge, perhaps, of losing three straight. Early in the second half, Tony Banks of the Rams goes back to throw a pass, picked off by Doug Evans, number 33, returns it for a touchdown. The Packers go on to win that game, don't lose another game for the rest of the season, including the playoffs and the Super Bowl. I think it's a play that we all remember from that season as almost turning that season around, when the Packers looked really for the first time like they were beginning to struggle. That one play, that interception return for a touchdown, seemed to kind of reinvigorate, re-spark that team, set it back on its way to the Super Bowl. Number 33 is Doug Evans. A solid career for the Packers, I would say, without being a hugely outstanding career, but very solid starting corner on that Super Bowl team. Had been a late-round draft pick. I can't remember. I ought to have looked this up. Sixth-round draft pick for the Packers in 1993. Became a starter at corner in 94. Started again at 95 with Craig Newsome, who was a rookie starting at the other corner. And those two guys were the starting corners for that Packers 96 Super Bowl team. Played 11, 12 years in the NFL, but five with the Packers before leaving as a free agent after the 97 season. Earned one second team All-Pro, but was a solid starting corner for the time that he was in Green Bay. He also had that interception in the Super Bowl. So not dissimilar to what happened with Super Bowl 45. In Super Bowl 31, the Packers scored early. And then Doug Evans came up with an interception on the very next New England drive. Packers turned that into points, in this instance, a field goal, and kind of never looked back from there in that Super Bowl. So he came up with big plays when the Packers needed them. And I would say a solid, rather than being an outstanding player, I would say, during that period of time for the Packers. But one that we'll always remember, I think, because of that mid-season interception.
It's not a bad career for a six-round pick. All right. Thank you for that. 34. All right. Starting to think of an obscure 34 already for next week. All right, let's get on to the slice. So Todd broke the news on last week's episode of Aaron Rodgers' injury. We were recording last Monday, and Todd said that Aaron Rodgers had just gone down. Now, we haven't talked since then.
I would like to clear up that I was laughing while I was talking about it. I want to clear that up, that I was not laughing that he... It was just the, you got to be fucking kidding me laugh, I guess.
Yeah.
But by no stretch of the imagination was I laughing that he got hurt. Because
of course.
Obviously, he's, if not my all-time favorite Packer, probably. Super unfortunate to see... You know, as it was happening, I thought, oh, he just twisted an ankle and who knows, right? I mean, and then it just sort of escalated into now he's in the tent. Now they're bringing out the cart. when they brought the card out to the tent, it's like, okay, there's something more going on. And then, of course, they broke the news of the injury and stuff. So currently, I guess the way it stands right now is they did like a new procedure. I mean, obviously, this is a pretty, I want to say it's a common injury, but it's a lengthy process for recovery. The procedure that was done to him was some type of new procedure that will expedite or speed up the recovery process. You know, they're hinting at, you know, if they are in position for the playoffs, that he would be ready for that. I don't know if you watched the Jets game against Dallas. Judging by that, now Dallas might be the best team in the NFL right now. But yeah, judging by how they played, or Zach Wilson, oof, it would be a miracle, I think, at this point for them to get a shot at the playoffs. Their defense is insane. Who knows? You never know.
Peter, thoughts on Aaron Rodgers?
As Todd said, it's really sad. You know, I was ready to move on, so it's not that conversation. Yeah, it's sad to see that happen to, you know, for somebody, as Todd said, been a great, great player. Only wish him well. I think he will come back. Sitting on my couch, it's easy to say that, but it will make him even more determined to come back, whether that's playoff time or next season. I don't think he would want to go out that way, and I don't think anybody would want to see him go out that way. The other thing is, I think in this day and age, as Todd alluded to, with the advances in medical procedures and surgery and stuff, there's a different outlook on this type of injury than there would have been 20 or 30 years ago, even for a guy that's 39, 40 years old. You know, today's 39, 40 in the NFL is 20 years ago's 30 or 31 in the NFL. Sad that it happened. Like I say, there's a certain, the sporting gods have a certain level of irony about them. But yeah, I'm just, like I say, I'm sure he will come back.
You know, my first initial thought was, this may have ended his career.
Yeah.
Because he's 39. He'll be 40, I think, before the end of this season, if I'm not mistaken, or before next season for sure. And now you're almost 41. You're a year off, which might not be the worst thing, you know, to take a year off of the beatings and that kind of thing. But then I heard him speak on McAfee, and you know, Aaron Rodgers is the king of external motivation. Someone says something to piss him off, and he's like, nope, fuck you, I'm doing this. When I heard that he was going after the naysayers immediately, I'm like, okay, he's clearly coming back. If only to tell those people, I'm in charge of this narrative and not you. It is a sad thing for the league. That game that you were watching, Todd, was the highest rated Monday Night Football league game in like 18 years.
Yeah.
For the Jets.
And on 9/11.
No, that was pretty cool. I mean, him running out with the flag was pretty awesome, right?
I mean, just so much build up to that.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean, that part of it was cool.
Yeah, that was amazing. Let me ask you this. So if you're Jets management, Robert Saleh, by some stretch, you get yourselves into the playoffs and he's cleared, do you risk throwing him out there for what could be either one or two games? Like, I don't know. That's a really interesting decision.
I guess the closest thing that I could think of in the past would be 1972 Miami Dolphins, right? So Bob Greasy was the starting quarterback, broke his leg halfway through that season. Earl Morrill came in, led them to an undefeated season into the playoffs. When Greasy was fit to play, he came straight back in to start. So that would be the kind of closest historical thing that if he's fit and cleared, I think he'll play. I think you have to play what you perceive are your best players, particularly if it's the playoffs. I'll be surprised if he's cleared to play by that time in the playoffs. I've seen, you know, some reports indicating that it's possible. I'm obviously not a medical person. But yes, if he was fit to play and they make the playoffs, then I think, yes, he plays.
Imagine Zach Wilson gets them there. You get them to the playoffs and then you tell him, thanks, but you're benched.
I get it. You know, even if Rodgers doesn't come, but let's just assume for the time being that Zach Wilson goes on to have a really good year. Somehow or other, he has a career year, and his young career anyway. But he throws for 4,500 yards, 40 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, leads them into the playoffs. Then they've got a interesting situation next year if Rodgers then comes back.
One, he's not going to fucking do that. He'll have 6 interceptions by week 3.
Yeah.
There's no way. The question you asked was, if your Jets brass Do you play Aaron Rodgers? 1,000% I do. Because while Zach Wilson led us here, you know it'll be the defense, and damn near every piece around him has a bigger part of the pie than Zach Wilson does. Is he the starting quarterback? Yes. Does Zach Wilson know from experience that Aaron Rodgers is a better player than him? 1,000%. I even feel like if you watch the Hard Knocks stuff, Zach Wilson has deferred a bit to Aaron Rodgers, and I don't think he would have a huge problem, even if he led him to playoffs.
If I'm the Jets, I go out and I get, there's a few vets floating around right now, veteran quarterbacks that could be signed, that they could bring in. I would do that now. It's an, well, we signed you to get, and you got us to the playoffs, but that's an easier benching than it would be. And it gives you a better chance because Zach Wilson, in my opinion, has zero chance to get to the playoffs.
If they decided to put a veteran quarterback in as the starting quarterback of the Jets, he better be somebody that can run. Because Zach Wilson, while he's holding the ball too long, is running for his fucking life out there.
Yeah.
I'm dropping quarters all over the place today. Zach Wilson has to run, and he's pretty athletic. I give him a lot of credit. He was running for his life against the Cowboys last night. Nowhere to go.
No.
They're not making the damn playoffs, but it's an interesting question to ask. All right, let's move on. The North was not good this week. Every team in the North lost, which is good for our Green Bay Packers, but interesting for the division as a whole. Todd, any thoughts on the division before we move on with Packer stuff?
The Vikings are now 0-2. They're not an 0-2 team, in my opinion.
You think they're better?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The game that they... God, who did they play this week?
Philadelphia.
They got off to a really slow start in that game. A strange call occurred in that game where Jefferson was caught the ball at the corner inbounds right at the pylon, lost the ball. The ball sailed over and then out of bounds and became a touchback. That's right. 6 points.
It's the right call.
Yeah. I went to bed because it was like, what was it, 27-3? I don't remember what it was. They were getting killed. Kirk Cousins rallied the troops and got them back into that game. So they're still, in my opinion, they're not an 0-2 team, in my opinion. And I think, Detroit lost, 36-31? Good for us. Yeah, record-wise. It'd be great if we were 2-0. We didn't shit the bed like we did yesterday, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's a division in flux, isn't it, with question marks. I mean, let's face it, we don't yet know who the Lions are. We don't yet know who the Vikings are. We certainly don't yet know who the Packers are. I think we know who the Bears are. Those other three teams, including the Packers, it's going to take a few weeks, I think, to work out exactly who these teams are. And interestingly, the Vikings, they play the Chargers this coming week, and the Chargers are 0-2 as well. So neither of those teams you would have expected, you wouldn't expect them to be 0-4 between them.
Yeah, that's an interesting game for sure. Minnesota is better than their record. Do I think they're going to go 6-11 or something like that? I don't. They're not going to be great because their defense isn't that great. But man, if you don't have Kirk Cousins on your fantasy team and he's out there, he is killing it.
Yep.
While Justin Jefferson was like the first pick in a lot of drafts this year, as well, he should have been. Kirk Cousins is fantasy gold right now.
He is.
I mean, their issue, an issue for a lot of teams in today's NFL. If you have to pass for 375 or 400 yards a game, then you've got problems on your team defensively. You can rack up those yardage, but it's usually because you're playing from behind or because you're playing catch up or whatever all the time.
This is that Packers team from a couple of years ago, right? The Vikings. It's the same scenario. We can't stop anybody, but we can score when we want to.
Yeah, it'll be interesting this week too, is Atlanta plays Detroit. So we'll be able to see, are they going to be able to do what they did to us against it? Like that'll be a very interesting game. I will definitely be trying to watch that one.
The over-under on that game, I think, is like 9.
Right. Really?
No, I'm making that up.
I mean, the Falcons aren't good. We'll get into that, but they aren't.
All right. Let's continue. The injuries on the offensive line are a problem. Elgton Jenkins, MCL injury, possibly out 3 to 4 weeks. David Bakhtiari, which Peter and I talked about before we went on air. Let's start with Jenkins. Him going out, Bakhtiari not starting. Jenkins is a huge miss. It's a huge loss.
It's the same knee that ended his season in 21. So it's an MCL. when he tore his ACL. If he goes on injury reserve, that's automatic 4 weeks. I would assume that that's going to be the call here. And then you move Zach Tom to left guard.
Do you?
Yeah. You start Nyman.
You do?
Yeah. At right tackle. Yeah.
Got you. Peter, what are your thoughts on the Jenkins injury and going forward?
Yeah, well, I think that it's the last thing the Packers needed from a position, from a, you know, a grouping of relative strength to Jenkins going out, Bakhtiari not playing. And in my view, you know, the Packers' best center is playing at right tackle. So they have the potential here not to have their best players at center, at left guard, at left tackle, not helpful. And it's certainly not going to help the cohesiveness they need in the running game. Well, we know that Jenkins isn't going to be able to go. We just don't know for how long. I think that Royce Newman will start at left guard. I don't think they'll move Tom from right tackle. I think in an ideal world, I think they'd like to get Zach Tom at center, right? Which is where he always should have been. And, you know, I've said this for 2 years. I think that's where they'd like to get him. They seem to have lost some confidence in Josh Nyman from perhaps where we were a year or so ago. I think they'll go for as little disruption in their eyes as possible. So I don't think they'll move Zach Tom. I think they'll just put Royce Newman in at left guard. Whether that's the right move or not is another question, but I think that's what they'll do.
Did Josh Nyman like take a shit on Curly Lambeau's statue? Or did he throw some kid's bike in the dumpster during training camp? Like, what has he done from last year to this where he's like persona non grata? I don't get it. Has he been that bad? Because he's not,
he's played well like the rest in of this them. Game. He played well this week.
I don't know what happened, honestly.
Can Walker play right tackle?
I don't think they'll do that. Him starting at left tackle, I think, was a fuck you, Josh Nyman. That's how it felt to me. You're no longer our guy for whatever reason. I don't get it. Is Rashid Walker better? I don't think so. I mean, I don't think he was very good in this game, but I honestly don't know anymore. You're going to have a problem when you're down to whatever it is that you're going to do.
No, it almost seems like we're right back into the same scenario as last year already.
Which leads to the David Bakhtiari question. Where are we with David Bakhtiari at this point?
Well, he was outspoken about, you know, when Rodgers got hurt, right? I think he tweeted something about basically calling the NFL out, saying you need to fix these fucking fields, get rid of the turf, go to natural grass, et cetera, which I 100% agree. Well, I 1,000% agree. So
they won't do it, but I agree.
No, they won't do it. I mean, there's players, Lionel Messi, who plays for Miami. He won't play on that shit. He just did it this last week.
He just said, I'm not playing?
He just said, I don't play on turf.
That's awesome.
All right. You want to sign me for $500 million? Great. I don't play on turf. So,
and just to reemphasize that point, when the World Cup is in the States next time, 2026, all of those places that have got turf have to put grass down because FIFA won't play any matches on turf.
Really? So we're going to have a game at Lambeau then?
That'd be cool. Be cold as fuck, but
they played some international friendlies here.
LaFleur was kind of, I don't want to say weird, but he was a little cagey when he was being asked about it, you know, about, and he was just like, well, he's just going to be questionable all year. And it's like, well, is he on a snap count? The game against the Bears, we were calling it out during the game. It's like, why the fuck is he in the game right now?
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to preserve him,
get him the fuck out of there. Yeah.
Get the fuck out of there. That game was done in the fourth fucking quarter. Maybe for the first or second, maybe the second series in the fourth quarter. But after that, he should have been out of that fucking game, period. There was no indication that he was actually hurt in that game. But maybe just like the extension of and the volume of snaps, he was a big reason why this game went south. A big reason why this game went south. Are they just kind of letting him call the shots on what type of turf he plays on? I don't know. I don't know what to make of it because, like, on the management side of it, it doesn't make any sense either, especially in the first game where they were running away with the game. And they had an opportunity to put him Josh Nyman, put him fucking Walker. You have serviceable dudes to go out there and just fucking run the clock, and they didn't do it.
Peter,
I'm with Todd, and I think that unless you're inside the organization and actually know, I think it's impossible for anybody outside the organization to really know what's going on here. You know, if we watched the presser today, LaFleur was, I want to say slightly annoyed by the questioning around Bakhtiari today. I think that's one way of describing it. He certainly shut down the questioning eventually about Bakhtiari. He didn't want to talk about it anymore. He was asked whether Bakhtiari would have played if the game was at Lambeau. And I believe, and I'm trying to remember, his response was very non-committal, such as, "I don't think so." So it certainly wasn't a definitive response. It's unclear whether the reason Bakhtiari didn't play was because whether it was a game on turf or whether it was, as Todd described, there's a nagging injury that came from the previous week, whether he was being rested. It's completely unclear as to the reasoning or a combination of those things. The thing that concerns me, and we talked about this, Dale, before the pod, was if this is getting to a point where Bakhtiari is unable to play a consistent number of games. This is an injury that occurred in 2020, you know, the original knee injury. It's nearly 3 years ago. For his own well-being and future life, is there a point here where retirement has to be considered? Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell somebody that they should retire. I don't know the extent of the injury, but the guy's going to live for hopefully another many, many years after football, and he wants to have a healthy life. And it just makes you wonder when a guy that size, 310 pounds, has a knee injury that we're still talking about nearly 3 years after the injury. Are we reaching that point where it's time to stop? I don't know.
I think there are like 20 million reasons why David Bakhtiari would not retire in the middle of a season. I'm not saying he plays for the money, but if you still think you can partially go or whatever it is that he's doing, I think he's going to ride this season out. If the Packers don't let David Bakhtiari go after this season, then there's something fucking wrong. As much as I like the man and he's a good character and he's a good dude and was a great player and he's still a great player when he plays, you cannot do this. You cannot have this fucking carousel over and over and over again. We've talked about it ad nauseum on this podcast. You have to have some stability. Even if the stability means that the left tackle you throw out there isn't as good as David Bakhtiari, at least you know Rashid Walker, Yosh Nijman, whoever the fuck it is. I don't know why I'm cussing so much. You have to send that guy out there week after week after week after week, because he will get better with snaps. Young guys are going to get better. You can't continue to walk him into practice. He practices all week. He doesn't play. Like, you can't do that with Rashid Walker, Yosh Nijman, whoever it is.
And like I said, you know, it's not for any of us to sit here and tell a great player like that what he should or shouldn't do. And hopefully, you never know, in 4 or 5 weeks' time, we'll be sitting here and he's played the last 4 or 5 games.
Yeah.
But we shall see.
Not a fucking chance.
All those questions to LaFleur, they're all valid questions. I don't think they're very prying or people trying to stir up like some type of drama or rumors or whatever. They're all like normal fucking questions. Yeah. Answer the question, Matt. Like, it's what is going on with him? We've gone through this whole turmoil of his injury for fucking ever. And now, like, you're being like you saying that he's questionable. Well, you're questionable too.
I think the turf gave the Packers an excuse why he didn't play. If they would have played on grass this week, then people would have been like, wait, why the fuck isn't he playing this week on grass? But I think it gave him an excuse. They should have just rolled with it. You know, he wanted to watch David's knee on turf. We're not sure how that's going, you know, after a week of I don't know, whatever.
It may well be answering about what position the Packers look at drafting in the first round next year.
100%.
It's time, isn't it? It's time to be looking at that open tackle position.
But isn't the practice facility all artificial turf indoor?
Yeah, but he hasn't practiced.
Right. But that's another like indicator of like...
All right, let's get on to this law. Yeah. Good, bad, and the ugly on offense. Peter, we're going to start with you. The good on offense.
And that's the place to start, and I'm glad you brought that up. Teams that score 24 points win 75% of NFL games. So once you reach that 24-point threshold, you've got a damn good chance of winning. Whatever else happens, you get to 24, you've got a three-quarters chance of winning. I'm going to start with Jordan Love. Actually, quite a similar performance to the previous week. A little bit slow starting. There were some passes you'd like to have back. Yeah, absolutely. But you touched on it, Dale, I think last week. His decision-making was generally very good. Not always accurate, but his decision-making was generally very good. And actually, a couple of his best passes both went incomplete. if you see the last pass that he threw to Dubs that ended the game, that was a phenomenal throw. When you actually see that from behind, absolutely phenomenal throw. And Dobbs should have caught that ball. Not that it would have mattered with the penalty and everything else, but I was very encouraged with the performance of Jordan Love. And I think part of the positive is you can still see stuff to work on. Got to improve the accuracy and some of the other stuff, which, you know, for a guy whose passer rating is 118 point whatever after two games of the season, six touchdown passes, and most importantly, no interceptions. Sure, there could have been one this week, but there wasn't. No interceptions, no turnovers. Yeah, again, very encouraged by the play of the quarterback.
Before you go, I just want to add to the Jordan Love thing. Before the season, we were talking about the Packers. You didn't want Jordan Love to lose them football games. He has certainly not been the reason the Packers lost, well, just this one week. He isn't the reason they lost this game.
No.
And that's good. You don't have a Zach Wilson type thing where you're like, holy shit, Jordan Love is throwing the ball to the wrong team. He's making bad decisions. Why did we draft? You know, I mean, all those things that come up when a quarterback plays so poorly. We have not seen that, knock on wood. And we played a better defense this week. You know, it wasn't the Chicago Bears again. This is a better team on defense, and he didn't stink it up. Sorry. Go ahead, Todd. Good on offense.
Well, before I get to the good, I should preface it by saying losses like this probably completely irritate the fuck out of me more than any other type of loss, right? Because this was like a game like this, you just leave. You can't lose games like this. It's so hard to win in the fucking NFL. And when it was in the fourth quarter, and it was what, it was 24-12 or something like that at one point. And I'm looking at the clock thinking there's like 11 minutes. And I'm thinking to myself, and I have no idea, but I'm thinking to myself, they're going to lose this game. They're going to fucking lose this game. They're up by 12, but we're going to find a way to fucking lose this game. And everything like fell into place after that. So when it comes to, and I'm not saying this is a playoff team, but later on in the season, it, we're on the cusp of breaking into the playoffs or not. Like, these are the types of games you look back on and go, fuck. You know, we were right there. Agree with what you said with Jordan Love. Yeah, he didn't lose this game. That's a great analysis of Jordan Love in this game. He did not lose this game for us. He did miss. There was a bad miss, a bad read. I'm sorry, not a bad miss, a bad read where Dobbs was, I think, running like a, it was like a flag route, and he threw it to the left sideline. And I think he knew it. Dobbs was wide open.
Oh,
20 some yards.
They showed that replay later on, right after it, didn't they?
Yeah. Every quarterback does that, right? So I'm not like pinning that particular play on Jordan Love. Yeah, I'm sure he would have wanted to have that one back. But like, what can you say? He had three touchdowns. He's managing and executing the offense the way he's supposed to. There's some growing pains, some things that got to be cleaned up. But I mean, all in all, he had another solid performance.
Jaden Reed is my favorite Packer wide receiver right now. So Dobbs is a good wide receiver. He's got relatively good hands. Christian Watson, when he gets back in the, on the field, is your burner. Athletic is all get out. Jaden Reed feels like the full package. Fast, can play in the slot, can do a lot of things. He's dynamic with the ball in his hands. He excites me. They need to get the ball in his hands. Watson is the two in my mind, and Dobbs is the three. I think that's the order of importance to get wide receivers the ball right now. And I would throw Luke Musgrave in there, too. I think that probably he comes before Dobbs because he needs to get the ball in his hands, too, and we can talk about that later. But Jaden Reed is the real deal. Peter, you said it. Dontavian Wicks is better than advertised. How he lasted till the fifth, sixth round or whatever, he looks like a pro wide receiver right now. Like, he looks like a guy that could play in this league.
I think it's an important point. I think that you look at that group of wide receivers, all of them very young, with Watson to come back. I think one of the positives is that we've seen lots of positives from all of them in the first 2 weeks of the season. So they haven't just relied on one guy or a couple of guys. Three or four or five of them, including Musgrave, are contributing, which is a really good thing to see.
I love Dontavian Wicks. I think I said that in the when we're doing the 53 or whatever, but I love that dude. He's done the most with what he's been given, right? Like, he's not going to get five or six looks a game, right? He might get like two or three. The attempts that he's getting, he's capitalizing on. He's filtered down through Christian Watson, through Dobbs, through Reed. Then you got, you know, your running backs and Musgrave. He's down the
pecking order.
But he's making the most of it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he looks like a pro player. He's got a wide receiver name. How can that not be how can he not be a receiver?
He does have a great name.
Dontavian Wicks. I mean, that is a receiver name. He was born with a receiver name.
Peter, let's get on to the bad. Let's talk about whose fault is it with the running game? Where do you lay the most blame for the fact that we can't run the football right now?
Where do I lay the most blame? On the offensive line. On the offensive line, right? I think it absolutely is a combination. So it's a combination of offensive line, the back, and the play calling. There are certain plays that will work better for certain types of back. I do not want to see AJ Dillon being asked to run some of the running plays that they would run with Aaron Jones. Let's just put it like that. You want him running up through the A-gap. Now, the A-gap's got to be, there's got to be a hole there for him to run through. So I think you've got this combination thing. But even if you across the two games of the season, if you take out AJ Dillon, who's rushing for 2.8 or 2.9 yards a carry, all of the other backs added together are only carrying at 3.8 or 3.9 yards a carry, right? And that includes Aaron Jones and Patrick Taylor and Emmanuel Wilson. That says to me, if you're not averaging 4.2, 4.3, 4.4 across all your backs, that's a problem in the NFL. If you watch some of the All-22 from behind, Jimmy Brown or Walter Payton or Barry Sanders ain't making many yards on the ground behind some of that blocking. Now, that's not to say that there weren't plays where AJ Dillon didn't appear to trip over his own feet or trip over the turf and couldn't get out of his own way to a degree. So, yes, yeah, absolutely, there's things that he needs to work on. And it appears, and I don't know whether this is because of lack of carries or what it is that he was never a super explosive back, but doesn't seem to have even that level of explosiveness that he had a couple of years ago to hit the hole quickly. I think there's work all round there. It concerns me. It concerns me because I'm not sure that just changing the back is going to make the difference.
Well, they threw Emmanuel Wilson in there for a couple of carries, and he averaged like 1.5 yards per carry. Do I blame AJ Dillon for this? Yes. I mean, the tripping over your own feet thing, okay, that stuff happens once in a while. The Packers played the Bears in week one, and he didn't have a great game in week one either, and he got opportunities. He is not going to make his own way. He needs a hole to run through. He ain't it. This is his last year in Green Bay. There's no question in my mind he will not play in a Packer uniform next year. He needs to play behind a line like the Eagles. Like the, you know, a running team where that they're going to smash you in the mouth. They're going to open holes. And I think he could be successful. If he can get to the second level and start just barreling over defensive backs, I think he could be successful. But that's not a lot of teams in this league.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about run blocking scheme as well, isn't it? So if you look at the Eagles or the Ravens, they're a straight ahead, smash mouth running team. So you're blocking downhill all the time. The Packers are running this mainly outside zone, not his forte. He is a square peg in a round hole there.
I wanted to add to that. If I'm the Atlanta Falcons defensive coordinator going into this week, and I know that Jones is out, and I know I've got AJ Dillon, who's going to run between the tackles and poses zero threat to the edge, I've got a pretty easy day as far as my run defense is going to be considered. In a game like this, where he's our running back one and everything's kind of on him, he almost tries to overcompensate to do things that are not in his repertoire, like making quick cuts and things like that. And he ends up fucking tripping over his own feet. The injury to Jenkins was from Dillon because he fucking tripped, caved in the back of his fucking leg. The other time that he tripped was a key fucking third and short. At that point in the game, we needed that fucking first down, right? And he fucking trips. Like you said, Dale, it should be, and I hope it is, his last year in Green Bay. I'm tired of, he's a great guy. I hate to sort of annihilate this guy, but, you know, and it's not his fault, right? I mean, the Green Bay, you know, Matt LaFleur's throwing him out there as an RB1. I felt like the carry should have been distributed a lot more. They had a lot more options. He had like 14, 15 carries in this, and Emmanuel Wilson and Taylor didn't have shit. No more talk of upside. Like, he is where he's at. That's it with AJ Dillon.
And I think there's a general question around the NFL. How many 250-pound backs are there that are really successful in the NFL today? I think this is a smaller back league. Even Bijan Robinson, who doesn't look small, is 5'11", 215. I don't know if the day of that big, big back isn't over. Because you need your backs to do so much these days, whether that's catch the ball coming out of the backfield, you split them out, you line them up in the slot, you split them out wide like they did with Bijan Robinson. It's just not suited now to today's NFL anyway.
His value is, as the game moves along and the defenses are burnt out and they're winding down and they're slowing down, that's when you bring in an A.J. Dillon. Perfect timing for that. He clearly in this game proved why and why he will never be or should not be an RB1.
This is a league of primarily 3-4 defenses, nickel defenses, dime defenses. You're out there playing against athletic guys. This is not four stereotypical linemen. And there are athletic dudes out there everywhere. Running backs in the league right now have to make guys miss. If you can't make a guy miss, you're going to get stuck somewhere. The holes aren't like they used to be. They're not gigantic holes that anyone can run through. That doesn't exist for the most part in the NFL right now. AJ Dillon doesn't have a place. I think, Peter, that was exactly right. 250-pound backs, unless they've got amazing feet, probably aren't going to be successful in this league. Let's move on to the ugly, Todd, because you don't text me 100% of the time with anger, but I always can tell when you're not happy about something.
Oh, yeah.
So the delay of getting penalty, just go ahead with the field goal thing or the non-field goal.
First offensive series, they got the big, long pass interference call, which gave them a first down. They didn't do shit after that. Like, they were, like, basically three and out. They decided to kick a field goal, and I'm like, oh, Carlson's going to blast a 51-yarder here. I believe it was 51. Am I right?
Yeah.
And next thing I know, I kind of, like, look away for a second. They're like, a delay of game. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? How? How the fuck is there a delay of game? On a routine, and when I say routine, I'm not saying routine as far as like distance. I'm saying routine is like, it's a field goal. Get the unit on the fucking field, snap the fucking ball and kick it. There's a fucking delay of game. I was like, am I going fucking mental? And that's fucking, that's all Bisaccia. And I know that he's a well-respected coach in this league. I get it. But man, that was ridiculous. They go back 5 yards. 56, I'm thinking, it's early in the game. You've got a guy who's 6 foot fucking four, who has a monster fucking leg. I'm not putting in enough quarters here. But let him go. Air it out. What's the worst that could fucking happen? And they punt, and we lose by one. I knew all along that field goal attempt was going to haunt us, and it ended up haunting us in the end.
I think there's two things, right? So I think that in this day and age, a 56-yard field goal is not like a 56-yard field goal was 20 years ago. I'm not going to say they're routine, but there's a heck of a lot of them that are kicked, right? I don't know what the percentage is, but it's way over 50%, way over 50%. You know, 20 years ago, hardly anybody kicked a 56-yarder. There was the odd statistical anomaly, Tom Dempsey's 63-yarder for the Saints at the end of the 60s, right? But 20 years ago, if you kicked a 50-yarder, that was something special. 50-yard field goals are routine in today's NFL. And 56-yarders indoors, on turf.
Right.
With a guy like Todd's just described, 6'4", 215, who would have been good from 66 yards last week, never mind about 56 yards this week. I don't understand the decision. The other thing I don't like about it, I think that sends a signal to your team that you're playing very cautiously. We're not playing to win here. We're playing not to lose. I'm saying that with a little bit of hindsight because I don't think I thought that at the time. I just hated the decision. Taking a step back, that is a very cautious decision. We'll punt, put them back deep, et cetera, and play some defense. Well, of course, you punt. It goes into the end zone. They're out at the 20, 25 anyway before you even start, and it's – Didn't like it at all.
That was a touchback in that situation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what did you gain there? I mean, Waylon had a great day of punting. I don't want to, like, bash him, but he can't back at the fucking 25. Like, nothing was really gained there.
I just want to go back to the how did we possibly get a delay of game on a field goal attempt, multiplied by the fact that Matt LaFleur is the fucking king of wasting first half timeouts. Like, nobody uses more first half timeouts than our coach. Why wouldn't you call one there? Go ahead, Peter, because I wasn't watching. I was still working at that point. I have no idea what the fuck happened. Maybe something happened.
Well, so you've got me onto my one of my favorite pet subjects, and that's the use of timeouts, right? And you're absolutely right. Matt LaFleur and Mike McCarthy before him were guys that seemed to fritter away timeouts like there's no tomorrow. And yet when you absolutely have to take one in that instance, you don't take it. To me, that says either somebody's not alert enough to know what's going on, or you're thinking it doesn't matter whether it's 51 yards or 56 yards, we're going to kick it anyway. And then you don't do that. Then you don't do that. But now you've mentioned it. Can I talk a bit more about timeouts? Second half, right? And this is where timeouts are really, really, really crucial. When we got to the end of the game, the Packers only had two timeouts because they'd frittered one away earlier in the quarter. And as it turned out, they couldn't make a first down anyway. But that was the difference between having 55 seconds and probably a minute and 25 seconds to run that last drive, because they'd frittered a timeout away earlier in the quarter, earlier in the half. John Madden used to say, in the second half of games especially, I never took a timeout. Right. I didn't allow Kenny Stabler to take a timeout, and I never took a timeout. He said the reason was very simple. I'll take the delay of game penalty because I can get the 5 yards back. I can never get the timeout back. And at the end of the game, you might need that timeout. And he said, I never, ever, 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 is that enough evers, took one in the second half.
Peter, and I think you should send that book to Green Bay highlighted and with a sticky note on the top of it. Coach LaFleur, here.
Well, it is that whole thing, right? I take a timeout on first and 10 to preserve 5 yards. You know what? First and 15 in this day and age, I can get the 5 yards back, but I can never get those 40 seconds back at the end of the game. One of my pet peeves.
So Todd did the notes for this game, and the first and only good on defense is that Quay Walker had a much better performance. Please expound on that.
But he have 9 tackles. It almost seemed like he was just running around the field with, to coin Peter's phrase, with his hair on fire. I mean, it almost seemed like he was trying to do too much, almost overplaying. It might have been his best game as a pro, maybe, although his pass coverage was deplorable.
Good.
Something positive on defense. He did play better. I think the PFF scores last week with his pick six, you know, those are skewed numbers, because like prior to the pick six, he was garbage. And in pass coverage in this game, he was targeted 6 times and there were 6 completions.
He is the Packers' highest. And again, PFF is not the only barometer on how well you play, but he's the highest graded Packer on defense right now. And it's not close.
Right.
Like, it's Quay Walker and then this guy's in the 7.
Nobody else. Yeah. So, I mean, PFF is a good tool to look at certain things, right? But sure, it's not really the full picture of like what happened, what really happened, or how the person performed, right? It just isn't. I do like it, and obviously we're talking about it, so obviously it's relevant. But he played well in this game.
Do you think that him and Devontae Wyatt had a little bit more juice in this game because they were playing in Atlanta? I only say that because when they were, you know, walking off the field and the game's over, Devontae Wyatt looked visibly pissed off to me. Now, there could be a million reasons for it. It might have nothing to do with them going back to Georgia to play again. It occurred to me that, man, Devontae Wyatt looks fucking pissed right now, which I love, by the way.
Yeah, I do, too.
I don't know if that was the motivation for it or not. I mean, Peter and I are higher on Quay Walker than you are, but for you to put it in, we're reporting what we see, right? We don't make up shit. So
you could obviously tell that he was probably the one player that, if it weren't for him, God knows what the score would have been. Whether he was chasing someone down from behind or not is irrelevant. But yeah, and maybe there was some influence there playing in Georgia, because he was really, and like I said, earlier, it looked like he might have been overplaying a little bit, trying to do too much.
Well, it's difficult to pick a lot of positives out of the defensive performance.
We're already on to the bad.
Well, before I get to the bad, I thought Rasul Douglas had a decent game. Now, he gave up a couple of plays. He gave up a penalty. He did have an interception. One thing that I hated the play, but one thing I really loved to see was when he got annoyed with Rashan Gary on Desmond Ridder's keeper on 4th and 5, which he scored.
Not staying
you home. Could see Rasul Douglas go over to Gary, and he was severely annoyed. He looked like he was letting Gary have it.
Which is good, right?
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, he didn't just trudge off the field. He looked like he was letting Gary have it, and quite right too. And to be fair to Gary, he made the mistake because he was trying to make a play. You live and learn, and he has to live and learn. You have to set that edge and so on and so forth. I think the disturbing thing generally on defense, inability to stop the run. Falcons ran for 211 yards, I want to say the number was. That 200-yard rushing mark is another one of those where teams win 78% of games when they rush for 200-plus yards, not surprisingly. You know, in that second half, fourth quarter in particular, but for a lot of the second half, and in fact in the first half, although the Packers were kind of bend but don't break on defense in the first half, the Packers never looked like they were going to stop that running game. Whether it was Algier carrying the football or Bijan carrying the football, they never looked like they were going to stop it. And I guess there was this huge contrast. When the Packers were on offense, it looked like the Packers were never going to get a yard rushing the football. And yet this contrast then when the Falcons were on offense, it looked like they were never going to stop them. And Robinson's a very good back. We know that. But we can all be good backs when the first contact you've got is 8 or 10 yards down the field. You know, it's difficult to know whether how much of that's scheme, how much of that's players. But I think the fact that we're struggling to pick out another defensive player that had a half-decent game other than Quay Walker kind of says it all. One of the concerns for me, and not just off the back of this game, just a general concern last week, this week, and last season, and I don't know this to be the case, obviously, but it's a question that I think probably Packers fans may well be asking themselves, is Devondre Campbell a one-year wonder? Appears to be somewhat anonymous on defense right now.
I was going to mention that. Devondre Campbell is a ghost right now.
Yep.
He has made no plays. And we're looking on like not just these two games, but almost the entire season last season. Like we're going, this is a big body of work, for lack of a better term. I don't know what happened. He said he was injured last year. Okay. But now you should be healthy because it's been however long. Where are you? The problem is, who the fuck else is it? There's nothing. McDuffie got a few snaps in this game at linebacker. Holy monkey. Wow. That's a problem.
Are we still on the bad?
We're on the bad ugly, yeah.
We're on the bad ugly, like, entire turmoil. I mean, they allowed 446 yards total. And you're talking about a defense that, gosh, I don't know the exact number. Maybe 7 of the 11 are first-round picks. What are we doing? What the fuck are we doing? It almost seemed like, too, Ridder had figured out that if I just drop back in the pocket, I can step through here. It almost became a play for them. We need a couple yards here. We need a first down. We need a couple, you know, 2-3 yards here. I'll just let the pocket collapse and step through. That became
like a quarterback draw.
Yeah, oh, yeah, because nobody is collapsing that pocket down. And I don't know how to remedy that or what the issue is. Missed tackles. There was a lot of missed tackles. My God.
And I think the thing is, you can look at individual plays, and lots of people do a great job of doing that and picking out that this guy didn't do this on this play. But this is a pattern. This is systemic.
Oh, yeah.
So this isn't just this week or last week. It's last season, and it's the season before. So this is a lot bigger than individual mistakes on individual plays.
And the common denominator is Barry.
Right.
And so you have to ask yourself, I think there's two questions, and I don't know the answer to this question. Is one, is it defensive scheme and defensive play calling? Or is it that they've drafted badly? All of these number one picks are not good enough to be number one picks in inverted commas. your gut would say, my gut would say, you probably can't be wrong on all of those guys. And when you look at them individually, you know, you look at a Jair Alexander or a Rashan Gary or, you know, a Kenny Clark or a Devontae Wyatt, and you look at those guys, even a Quay Walker, you look at those guys individually, you say, there's some good football players there. So, yeah, you get the odd one that doesn't perhaps perform to the level that you want. But, and amongst those guys, there's some damn good football players there. So it doesn't, I'm almost answering my own questions, but it doesn't appear to be that they've drafted that badly, which then goes back to system and coaching, I guess.
Or lack of leadership, right? Like these guys don't appear. And like you said, Peter, like this is a consistent pattern. You can just keep on tracing this back week to week, play by play, however, year to year. And Barry is the common denominator in all of it. I don't get the feeling that these guys are being led. If you're a defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator, you're a coach in the NFL, period, you turn your guys into fucking dogs. Like these guys, they're not playing like fucking dogs.
No, you're right. And it makes you wonder from the outside looking in how much the players believe in the coaching and the scheme.
Right.
Right.
I don't think they're bought in.
And those two things have to be together. Whichever's right, whichever's wrong, they have to be together. You just wonder about, you know, and we said this years ago, when you bring in a guy whose track record isn't fantastic to begin with, I think that's difficult for players. When things start to go askew, there's nothing to fall back on. There's nothing there that says, well, actually, we know that this guy in the past has been a hugely successful defensive coordinator and this thing can turn around. There's nothing that we've historically that says that's the case. The other question I would ask about, are they missing the likes of Jerry Gray in there? Those guys are difficult to replace. I don't know. I don't know where this goes. My fear, my long-term fear for Matt LaFleur is that he ends up in a Mike McCarthy situation where McCarthy held on to Dom Capers all those years, and by the time he'd made the change, it was almost too late for McCarthy's career. And there's a danger that this happens again. The other thing I would say, sorry, I keep throwing these out there, but the other thing I would say, even if you have highly successful coaches, over a period of time, you have to move on from those guys. Right, because it all becomes old and it all becomes stale, et cetera, et cetera. So even if you regarded this as this potentially as a player problem rather than a coaching problem, and I'm not saying that's what it is, but even if there were people going down that route, eventually, once a guy's been the defensive coordinator for 3, 4, 5, whatever it is, years, it becomes time to move on anyway.
One of my criticisms of LaFleur, and there's not many, but one of my criticisms of LaFleur is that he's kind of a yes man as far as like the organization is concerned. He's not the type of coach who's going to say, you know what, we're making a change at defensive coordinator, you're fired, flat out firing a guy and making a fucking move. That's my biggest fear with this whole issue with the defense, is that the guys aren't bought into the system. The guys don't really, they're not really connecting with Barry as far as like leadership is concerned. These dudes want to be led. They want to be led, and he's not giving that to them. And you go a step up to LaFleur, who's obviously witnessing all of this. You kind of start looking at him and saying, dude, make a fucking change here. All he did in the offseason was defend him. I'm not making a change. He's our guy. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, at a certain point, how many fucking first-round draft picks does it take
for
a coach to fucking lead this unit in the right fucking direction? I mean, come on.
So here's the other thing, right? In this league, over the last 20 years or so, there's been lots of really good defensive coordinators. That I say a defensive coordinator in one place for 4 years, they get a head coaching job, maybe that doesn't work out, but they go straight back into another defensive coordinator job. Take a Jim Schwartz, who's now at Cleveland, or go back a few years, Wade Phillips would be a defensive coordinator here for 3 years, somewhere else for 3 years. You know, and those guys were always in demand. As long as Wade Phillips wanted a job, there'd be a defensive coordinator job for him in the NFL. Now, he wasn't always 100% successful, but in today's NFL, defensive coordinators are a difficult job. but it's because those guys were highly respected and generally ran very disciplined and good defenses. Todd Bowles, those kinds of guys will walk into another defensive coordinator's job tomorrow. The question I would ask is, would another team in the NFL give Joe Barry a defensive coordinator's job?
Absolutely not.
He's not getting hired again. When he is finally fired from the Green Bay Packers, Joe Barry will never be the defensive coordinator of any NFL team ever in his lifetime. It right. won't happen. You can use the excuse that I was with the Lions and with the Redskins or Commanders or whatever they were, and they were a shit team. And then I went to Green Bay and I had all these fucking guys that could run like lightning and I couldn't do shit with them. That's not going to be good for your resume. I want to stop on the Joe Barry thing because we're going to do this all year, I feel like. And we have plenty of time to do so.
We're going to talk about Jair.
Let's talk about Jair. He's supposed to be our best defensive player. He is our best defensive player, I would say. He hasn't been it again this year. He kind of picked his spots last year. He was very good in some spots, not as good in others. He was matched up against Drake London, who is, I would say, an above-average wide receiver. Now, Drake London's of the world, the 6 foot four, I don't know what his whole body size is, but he's way bigger than Jair. Those guys are going to give Jair problems.
Yep.
Because he is not physically big enough. He's lucky he didn't play in the era of the Calvin Johnsons. He doesn't defend those guys well. He didn't play well. And he dropped a for sure pick six. Like one of the first plays I walked into after working on Sunday was, holy shit. That is pick six, change the demeanor of the game, maybe win the football game for them right there if he runs that back. Is it 17-3 at that point? But that's a game-changing play.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe.
I honestly believe that part of their offensive plan, scheme, however you want to talk about it, was to actually go after Jair with a big receiver that they had and just kind of test the waters to see, like, let's put London out there and see how this goes. As soon as they had success, man, the floodgates opened. They were targeting that guy. I think he had at least six catches and a touchdown.
He had six catches for 67 yards or something like that. And he didn't. Clear. Someone said that, you know, Alexander got cooked. He didn't get fucking cooked, but he didn't stop London either.
He didn't stop him either. But I think they saw that as a advantageous matchup. Let's see what happens here. And it's like, well, had success there. Well, had success there. And it kept going and building and building and building over and over and over. If I've got the Green Bay Packers on my schedule as an offensive coordinator and I've got a 6'4", 6'5" receiver, guess what? I know exactly who I want to line up across. So he had a bad game. And I hate to put Jair down in the ugly. I almost want to say like him dropping that pick six was instrumental in the rest of his performance. It almost seems to go downhill from there. A massive mistake. It that was not like one of those, oh, you should have caught that. That was a gimme.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fucking gimme.
I think I said to you, Todd, that's one of those passes that you see them throwing the DBs in practice. They backpedal and they come towards the ball and the ball's thrown to them and they just toss it. That's what it looked like.
Yeah.
He was dead in his hands.
He was targeted six times and five receptions along with two missed tackles. As far as like the PFF stuff, I think there was about five or six guys who played all 82 snaps of defense. He was one of them. He was at the bottom. Savage was at the absolute bottom. He was terrible. I was texting you. I was like, Savage is making plays. Savage is making plays. And then, like, I don't know if Savage is – his performance is being affected by the non-performance of others in front of him.
Of course.
Yeah. Right? I don't want to beat up on him too much. Fuck, man. I mean, if you're a free safety – and you have all these opportunities, you shouldn't be getting that many opportunities for tackles. There's lines of defense in front of you. And I feel like, yes, he started out with a few decent plays. But again, I think he got in a position where nobody else was fucking doing anything in front of him.
Yeah, and I think that's why he got beat deep on that one pass.
He did.
You know, and that's because he got fooled and came up to play to run and just couldn't get back there. But, you know, it does beg the question, and we've talked about this with Savage before, his forte has always appeared to be playing downhill, playing closer to the line of scrimmage, or covering the slot receiver, because you're covering that guy in a 5-10 yard area. His forte, in my view, from what we've seen, has never been playing as the deep free safety.
Right.
Now,
he can't backpedal. He cannot turn and run. He's terrible at that.
This might be a needs must because there isn't anybody else at the safety position.
It's Rudy Ford or Jonathan fucking Owens.
Or whether this is, again, is a scheme thing, I don't know. But they've got real problems at that position. And
he's the best of the bunch. I mean, athletically. But, yeah, who else? You don't want Rudy Ford having to chase somebody down the field because he ain't getting there.
Yeah, when I was texting you early in the game, I was like, oh, Savage is doing this. Savage is doing that. And then all of a sudden.
And he did. Early in the game, he got up there and made some plays, yeah.
But then things, you know, other parts of the defense were breaking down as the game continued. Yeah, it looked like he was kind of out there on an island by himself. That play, Peter, that you mentioned, he's got to make a play on that ball.
Yes.
I mean, that's...
Knock the ball away.
It's just like...
You're right there.
That was a big play right there.
You almost got the ball lodged in your fucking face mask. Like, all you gotta do is knock it away. Damn.
I think Atlanta knew that. They could match him up deep. The advantage is in their favor. Why not take a shot? You get a PI. Odds are in your favor.
Feel better anymore.
We've, like, beat you down.
I have a question because it's just suddenly occurred to me, right? Well, it's not suddenly occurred to me. It's one that was in the back of my mind. And it's not a defensive question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Because we mentioned the last play of the game earlier. What on earth is... I'm not going to chastise a guy for an illegal motion and stuff because that happens, right?
No, please do.
What is the play call that has Patrick Taylor split out wide when you're on 4th and 10 or whatever it is? What is that?
Right. Put wide receivers in the game that actually can make those plays. Patrick Taylor runs in a straight line. He can't do anything else. He is a clear decoy on that pattern. That's god awful. He doesn't even know what he's doing out there. He's like, why am I out here? He's asking the same fucking question. All I am in is to get like 2 or 3 runs during the game and pass block. That's my job. I don't know what to do when I'm out this in this spot. And I'm out of court, so I can't cuss anymore.
That was all sandbox, too. LaFleur was probably like, go out here. Go ahead and check with the ref. Am I online or not? Or
stupid play.
Yeah, who knows?
Okay, we're moving on now. We're moving on because we're like an hour and 30 minutes into this podcast. This is like a zero doinks episode. We're so long into this thing.
Split it in two or something.
We did that once, didn't we?
Huh?
Episode 48 and 49 or something.
Yes, we did. We did split an episode in half. It's not happening because it's all about one thing. It's all game. All right, we're previewing the Saints right now. So the Saints, they have Derek Carr as their quarterback, who Todd told us before the show is going to pass Peyton Manning in career yards this year, which is absolutely bonkers.
And Marino.
Hall of Famers.
Right. And then he's probably closing in on Favre.
Fuck no. Don't even say. I thought for sure you were going to say he's going to ask me if he's a Hall of Famer. We'd ask Peter if he's in the Hall of Very Good like they did Donovan McNabb this week.
The Saints are playing right now as we speak on Monday Night Football, but... So I was watching the pregame, and they're like, Derek Carr with like 35,000 yards. And I was like, what? 30? What? No way. And they showed basically the guys that he's going to surpass this year, likely.
Disgusting.
I mean, God forbid an injury or something, but I was shocked. Good for him, but probably the most insignificant 35,000 yards ever thrown in the NFL.
Exactly. He is right now the 18th out of 33 in PFF grade. So he's thrown for 35,000 yards, but he's in the bottom half of the league in PFF grades right now. Chris Olave, your guy, is one of the top 10 receivers in the league, according to PFF.
And he's
Jamal Williams,
team.
Our guy, who we know and love. And if I could go back, I would take Jamal Williams over AJ Dillon all day long. But he is 46th of 47 running backs right now.
Who?
Jamal Williams. He's not doing well. So Ryan Ramczyk, former Badger, plays tackle for the New Orleans Saints. He is 16th in PFF for tackles. So that's pretty good. on defense, they've got some players on defense. I always look at the offensive side of the ball and tend to forget the defense, but Marshawn Lattimore is a great player. That should be interesting, especially if Watson is coming back, not coming back. Jones is coming back, not coming back. Demario Davis is the highest ranked linebacker in all of PFF right now. And then Cam Jordan, I swear he's like 900 years old. He's been a good player like all of those years. So he's older than me.
He's got to be.
Right. He is old. Still playing at a pretty high level. They've got some pretty good defensive players too. So this is an interesting game. I picked this as a win early on. The Packers right now are 1-point favorites at home. That's almost just basically a pick 'em game. The Packers have covered. They covered last week. Right. They lost by one. They were 2.5-point dogs. And the over, because the Packers can't stop anybody and they need to score points, the Packers are almost a guaranteed over. Just thoughts on this game, Peter, in general?
Well, I mean, the Saints are playing the Panthers right now. And what is it? 6-3 Saints in the third quarter.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a game that the Saints probably think that they're going to pull out? You would imagine. Yeah. Playing a rookie quarterback there and Bryce Young. And you know, so they're going to come into Lambeau Field 2-0. I don't know. For the season, if we'd have said the Packers are 1-1 after the first couple of games, I think we'd have said, yeah, that's okay. Okay. I think the manner of the loss last week is disturbing because they simply could not stop one facet of the game. Who knew Bijan Robinson was going to run the football?
Yeah, we did.
Who knew? Right? And you still can't stop it. That's disturbing. Now, I guess, as you've just pointed out, perhaps the Saints' running game isn't their strength. You know, the passing game, you would think, would be their offensive strength with Carr, as Todd said, thrown for 1 million yards in his career already. Olave, Michael Thomas, I guess.
Rashid Shaheed playing well right now.
If you're asking me who's going to win this game, are we at that point?
Yeah, we might as well. We're an hour and 40 minutes into this podcast.
Given that in week one, we all predicted the Bears would win and the Packers ended up winning. And last week, we all predicted the Packers would win and they lost. We're not off to a great start. I think the Packers win this game. I think they bounce back and win this game by about a touchdown. So I'm just going to call it 27-20.
Oh, damn. You took mine.
You can also say 27-20.
I was just like going through it in my head and all of a sudden like you said it. So,
well, as I was about to come out with it, I thought, I wonder what score Todd's going to say. I know it's going to be 27-20.
Yeah. The three pillars of offense are obviously like your best offensive lineman, Bakhtiari, your best running back in Jones, your best receiver in Watson. Like having those guys back, and we're assuming that they will be, fingers crossed. We saw what happens when they're not. Those are like the three, you know, different functions of an offense. Line, receivers,
running backs.
All your number ones are out. If we, you know, hopefully we get two, if not all three of them back, I think that will open things up for the offense, obviously. And they can stay on the field longer. I have no trust in the defense whatsoever to like turn things around. Like they're just going to all of a sudden like figure things out. They're not going to figure things out. If we can get the time of possession on our side of the ball, maintain a running game, then I think we have a very good chance of winning this game. And that is the exact score that I had in my head. I have zero trust in our defense. Zero.
The only thing for me is what Peter said. According to their PFF scores, their run game is not Atlanta's run game. Our defense is better at stopping the pass than they are at stopping the run. Would I run against the Packers all day long? Yes, until they stopped it. But if you're not that team, you can't do that. You can't just become a running team when you're not that. And I don't think that New Orleans is going to all of a sudden go predominantly run. I think the Packers win this game too. I think it's 28-24. It's going to be close and it's going to be a big scoring game for what you just said. The Packers can't stop anybody, but I also think the Packers offense, especially if they get those guys back, they should be able to move the football and score points. They scored without Watson and Aaron Jones.
Right.
And I don't want to play the injury card, But if those two guys play in this game, even if Bakhtiari doesn't, I think the Packers would have won this game. All right, so we all think the Packers are going to win.
Nice. Yes.
And then they're going to lose. All right, so thanks for listening to episode 133 of the Average Cheese Podcast, the Doug Evans episode.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go. Pack Go.